Good morning. This is Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. It's heating up in Southern California. Looks like a hot weekend. A lot of folks heading to the beaches, including along the Central California coast. We're visible as you drive on Highway 1 or 101 are the offshore oil rigs. They've been a part of Santa Barbara's history for some time now, but it appears the life of those oil platforms may be coming to an end. Houston Oil Company, known as PXP, or Plains Exploration and Production, has agreed to shut down its offshore oil production off the Santa Barbara County coast quite a bit earlier than its contract allows. We'll talk about the deals, which involve public lands being made available for parks along the Central California coast and in the Central California wine country. Kenneth Weiss of the Los Angeles Times reports today's front page story. Ken, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me, Larry.
Give us a little bit of background on these negotiations. I know that this deal is largely driven by the price of oil now.
Well, that's right. PXP bought into this one area in 2004 and was interested in drilling into slant drilling into state waters the way it had been proposed before by its previous owner, but realized that the objections among the local environmental groups was that it would extend the life of these platforms, and these platforms tend to hang around for a long time. So they brought in a very creative vice president who approached these environmentalists and said, well, what if we just assure you we won't extend the life of these platforms? We'll pull out at a certain date, and that got the ball rolling.
And what is involved in the way of lands that PXP would be providing that would be available for public purposes?
Well, I think to sweeten the deal, as I understand it, PXP promised to donate essentially about 3,900 acres. Some of it is along the Gaviota coast there, right? As you drive up the 101, before you turn inland at your Gaviota State Beach, there's some sort of prime real estate, ocean view stuff. It's this terraced grasslands that are sort of gorgeous up there. Agreed to give that over to the Trust for Public Land to turn into parkland, as well as a much larger section farther inland. It's just near Lompoc, and it was an area where PXP had proposed to do a major housing development.
So nearly 4,000 total acres, as you report in today's Times, would end up in public hands if this deal is approved.
That's right.
And in exchange for PXP getting the right to do this slant drilling, they're making a number of concessions, but are there any potential flies in the ointment here that would perhaps make it not profitable for them to do the slant drilling off the one platform that would continue operating?
Well, that's almost a production question that I'm not sure I can answer. Steve Rush, who is this creative vice president, said that he's in a very speculative business, so they assume they've got as much oil and natural gas as they in something like 200 million barrels of oil and 50 billion cubic feet of natural gas out in this one relatively untapped reserve. But as he points out, you never know till you go try to get it. They're planning to sink 22 new wells and from an existing platform and try to reach in and suck that oil out and to do it in a quick amount of time before their self-imposed deadline of 14 years runs out and they pull out.
People who live along the Central California coast remember the disastrous Santa Barbara oil spill of 1969. If I'm not mistaken, the group GOO, Get Oil Out, was formed after that. There have been all kinds of opposition to offshore oil drilling, not just because of the aesthetics, but concerned about environmental problems as a result. How difficult was it to get these environmental groups like GOO and the other ones to back a deal like this to allow for a major slant oil drilling project?
Well, I think it was a bit of a culture shock for most of these folks. This has been two sides that have squared off in before various public bodies and in the courtroom for years, and now they find themselves on one side of the debate, all promoting this idea. The president of Goo, as they call themselves.
Great name, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a great name, and inspired by the gooey crude that once coated the beaches of Santa Barbara in 69, just said it was a total culture shock, but that realized that their attorney and PXP had put together such a good deal for the community, just really couldn't pass up this chance.
All right, Ken, we're going to let you go. Just anything quickly to add about the historic significance of this? I mean, by all accounts, this looks like a huge deal for the future of the Santa Barbara area.
It's a very interesting and, I think, sort of historic shift in an area that's very sensitive to oil spills and oil production. If you go along the whole California coast, the greatest cluster of offshore oil platforms are all right there in the Santa Barbara Channel. So it's interesting that it's happening right there with such in such a historic spot.
All right, Kenneth Weiss, thank you for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry.
Los Angeles Times staff writers written today's front page story. We're next joined by the Lieutenant Governor for the state of California, John Garamendi. He's a member of the State Lands Commission, which is one of the state agencies that has to approve this negotiated deal. Thank you very much, Mr. Garamendi, for being with us.
Delighted to be with you, and this is a this is different. For 32 years now, I've opposed oil drilling off the coast of California, and now we've got a situation where it looks like there's going to be more oil drilling and a termination of oil drilling. So that's quite a deal.
What do you think is going to be the response of your fellow commissioners, as well as the State Coastal Commission, which has to approve this?
Well, certainly we're going to take a long, hard look at this. I believe that John Chung shares my view that no more oil drilling off the coast of California. However, we have a situation where apparently this deal will terminate drilling from four platforms that are in a very sensitive area of the state, the platforms that could continue to drill for many, many decades. But apparently by 2022, all oil production on those four platforms will cease, and the platforms will be removed. And that is really quite a change, and I think a very important one. With regard to the State Lands Commission, we have a big task out ahead of us. We've not issued leases for 30-some years, so we're going to have to take a look at what this all means. There are royalty issues. There are details that we'll have to look at. I expect we're going to be very busy for the next several months as this thing gets put together.
So it's a huge step, as you see it, that the environmental groups and the oil company PXP have made the agreement, but there's a lot of issues yet to be resolved.
Well, there are certainly details that are peculiar or specific to the State Lands Commission. We have to issue the lease, which means all of the details, a very complex contract will have to be written. And then there's going to be a discussion about over the royalties. The company stands to make billions, or at least a billion, if not several billion dollars on this deal. So we'll have a discussion about royalties, and we'll have a discussion about the details of the contract or the deal that the agreement that's worked out between the environmentalists. Ultimately, it has to be approved by the state and the federal government, as well as the Coastal Commission and the State Lands Commission. So we're going to have a task out ahead. We'll get to it. But again, this is a remarkable change in policy for both the oil industry that is willing to terminate, stop, eliminate production, remove the platforms. For the oil industry, that is quite new. And very, very different. And for the environmentalist to cut a deal that would allow drilling and in exchange for land and termination of oil production in a very, very important part of the coast.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
He's a member of the State Lands Commission, one of the bodies that has to provide approval for this deal that would bring to a close offshore oil drilling with four major platforms off the Santa Barbara County coast, and would allow for one of those platforms to be used for a major slant drilling project. In exchange, be all kinds of concessions from the oil company PXP, including nearly 4,000 acres that would be donated as public lands and an expansion of parks. With us from the Environmental Defense Center in Santa Barbara is David Landecker. He's executive director of the organization, which took the lead in negotiating this deal. Mr. Landecker, thank you for being with us.
Nice to be with you.
Well, give us the backstory on how long these negotiations took.
Well, the proposal began in 2004. We took the position on behalf of the environmental groups that we represent that the biggest issue here was that by this slant drilling proposal, the life of Platform Irene could be extended by as much as 40 years. And there was always an understanding that these platforms would go away at the end of their leases. The project, according to the environmental documents that exists there already, was supposed to terminate in 2022. And when PXP came back to us and said, well, what if we guaranteed you that we would not drill any longer than the existing project? That began the discussion, and that was about a year ago. We've gone through all the detail and all of the various parts of the agreement that you've talked about. I mean, basically what happened is we would bring up an objection and say, here's a problem. And they would say, well, what if we meet that problem? Mm-hmm. And we talk about how can we meet that issue. And ultimately, they were able to meet every objection we put in front of them, including this incredible benefit of 4,000 acres of prime, important land as parkland. They gave enough that we came to the conclusion that this was a rational deal. It was a good thing for the environment. It was a way that oil can be taken out of the channel, and we know when it's going to be done. We know we have four different platforms that are going to be decommissioned and removed and two processing plants. There were just so many benefits that we said, okay, this makes sense.
Is PXP the major operator of offshore oil platforms off Santa Barbara?
No. Actually, none of these are off the city of Santa Barbara. All of these are in the north of our county. There are four platforms that are involved in this deal, which is it's a significant number. They are not. There are other large companies, Venico being one of them. These have gone through a whole process. There have been they bought these platforms from Nuevo Energy. Nuevo Energy, I bought them from Chevron and other large production companies. So PXP is a big player, but they're hardly the only player.
All right. Do you think that there might be a model in here for a future deal with another company, or is this a special circumstance?
We think that this should be a model. The fact is that what we look at this as is showing that the environmental movement has grown up a long way, that we've gone a long way in terms of what environmentalism means. It's no longer are just saying, no, you can't do that. It's saying, here's what we need to make things make sense.
All right.
That a carbon neutral project or one that actually reduces the amount of carbon in the environment is, number one, set dates on which we know that projects will end and we will actually get oil out of Santa Barbara County is extremely important. That's really the precedent that was set here. Minimizing all of the impacts and then actually creating benefits for the community that where we get more open space, where some environmental good comes from what is going on here is what we've looked for. And if we can get that with other projects, there's no telling what might happen.
We thank you, Mr. Landecker. Thank you so much. Executive Director of the Environmental Defense Center. We'll hear from the local group GOO coming right up.
Programming is supported by Fox Searchlight Pictures, presenting Young at Heart, the Sundance Film Festival comedic documentary about a lively chorus of seniors who prove that rock and roll will never die. Now playing at the Landmark and Hollywood Arc Light.
Programming on 89.3 KPCC is supported by the Los Angeles Philharmonic, presenting Esa-Pekka Salonen leading the orchestra in music by Mozart and Bruckner on April 24th, 25th, and 26th at Walt Disney Concert Hall. The Phil's veteran clarinetist Michelle Zakowski comes front and center as soloist for Mozart's Sublime Clarinet Concerto. And Salonen leads Bruckner's Sixth Symphony, a work he hasn't conducted in L.A. for 23 years. Tickets at laphil.com. The L.A. City Council this morning may consider whether to change the way police and the feds work together on immigration. KPCC's Brooke Minkowski has more.
The special order keeps police from asking about the immigration status of people they've arrested. Former L.A. Police Chief Daryl Gates enacted it almost 30 years ago. He said it would allow undocumented immigrants to report crimes without fear of deportation. Councilmember Dennis Zine wants to amend Special Order 40 so police may question gang members about their immigration status. During a council meeting this week, the family of Jamil Shaw made an emotional request to amend the special order. Shaw was the 17-year-old L.A. high school football star killed last month. Police say the suspect in his shooting is a gang member who may have lived illegally in this country. Brooke Binkowski, 89.3 KPCC.
A very warm day today in the Southland with highs near 90, even warmer this weekend, and it'll be cooling off on Monday. It's 1021 at 89.3 KPCC.
Garrison Keillor and A Prairie Home Companion will be at the Greek Theater for a live show on Friday, June 6th. All the Prairie Home regulars will be there, plus Bonnie Raitt and Martin Sheen. For tickets, go to kpcc.org.
This is Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. My new favorite name for an organization is GOO, Get Oil Out. The Santa Barbara County-based organization formed in the wake of that disastrous oil spill of 1969, which killed, I don't know how many thousands of birds and wreaked havoc with the wildlife off the Santa Barbara County coast. It's an organization that's been extremely effective in fighting the offering of new leases for offshore oil drilling, and they are one of the parties involved in these negotiations with the oil company Plains Exploration and Production, which operates these four offshore platforms. Carla Fisk is a member of the board of directors and the technical director of Get Oil Out, GOO. Carla Fisk, thank you for being with us on Air Talk.
Absolutely thrilled.
Thanks very much. Well, was this a kind of a culture shock for your organization to feel okay about a major slant drilling offshore oil project, but in exchange for these kinds of concessions?
Yes, it definitely was. I mean, I was involved in some of the earlier negotiations on behalf of Get Oil Out. And so for me, looking at this from the very beginning, it was clear that we had the possibility of something that was unprecedented. The nest egg, if you will, of something that could grow into something really, really beneficial for the community. But many of my board members had been on the organization a long time, and it was very, very difficult for them to fathom that they would ever support any further oil development in Santa Barbara County. And so we had, I think, three two-hour board meetings before we were able to come to the conclusion that, well, we wanted everyone on our board to feel comfortable with it, that, in fact, this was an unprecedented situation. We had never, ever, ever had an oil company approach us and say, what if? And to be serious about it, really, not just like we'd like to make you feel good about our development. They knew that where the politics was, and they knew that our opinion really mattered, along with that of Citizens Planning Association. We were the two clients that had started off opposing this project a year or two ago.
And were some of your board members, you said, have been with you a long time, are some of these folks who were out there, you know, cleaning up birds in 69 and who firsthand dealt with the devastation of that spill?
Yeah, I would think at least one of our board members might have been out there at that point in time. We have one board member that's been on the board quite some time. Some of the board members that started Get Oil Out, unfortunately, are no longer with us. But I think that was what was the most difficult for him. He kept envisioning those people scowling down at him saying, you're doing what?
Yeah, yeah. And what is your thought? I mean, the larger Santa Barbara County population, I mean, is your thought that if GOO approves of this and other environmental organizations, that probably the general population will support this deal?
Well, I think that's true, and I think it's like upside-down pyramid. I mean, one of the things that our organization, GOO, and also Citizens Planning Association did after we made a commitment to this and felt that we had struck a deal that was well endowed with benefits for the community, we started to talk to some of the other key organizations, the Sierra Club and Audubon Society, and some of the folks that we wouldn't want them to come back and say, hey, you guys really messed up here. And unilaterally across the board, people understood very clearly that this was a really good deal for the community, because those oil platforms could sit there for a long time, and the higher the price of oil, the longer they would sit. And in fact, the original Point Pedernales project when it was originally approved, was estimated that it would end in 2007 last year. And then the new estimates came out to 2022 that Kent Weiss referred to earlier. So it was pretty clear that I've never seen an oil development end when it was expected to end. Let's just put it that way. But this one will. We know that for a fact.
Carla Fisk, thank you very much for sharing the perspective of Get Oil Out, GOO, the Santa Barbara County-based organization that was created in the wake of that 1969 oil spill that despoiled so much of the Central Coast. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Carla Fisk is a member of the Board of Directors and Technical Director of GOO. This is Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. Well, it was a rough day yesterday for Los Angeles County's Department of Health Services. First, negotiations between the county and a small hospital based in Long Beach for that hospital, Pacific, to take over the King Harbor Hospital in Willowbrook fell apart. And then shortly after that, Dr. Bruce Chernoff, who directs the County Department of Health Services, announced that he is resigning from the position at an undetermined future date. With us is Los Angeles Times staff writer Garrett Therolf, who is the lead writer of today's story in the Times on these dual hits to county health. Mr. Therolf, thank you for joining us.
It's good to be with you, Larry.
Thanks. Well, let's talk first about what happened with Pacific Hospital in Long Beach, because there have been a lot of media coverage of this and a lot of skepticism expressed about this small hospital being able to run what had been a very large public hospital in Willowbrook.
That's right. At one point, Martin Luther King Harbor Hospital, formerly known as Martin Luther King Drew Hospital, had about 400 beds. It was slowly whittled away, and as you know, it was closed in August. And ever since, the county has been trying fairly desperately to entice someone, a private entity, to reopen it for them. They put out a request for proposals, and really the only viable option that they received was from a small private hospital in Long Beach with about 184 beds. And they had proposed to open a fairly small hospital there at the Willowbrook site sometime early next year.
Now, the Times had reported a few days ago that there was a friendship between the owners of Pacific Hospital and Los Angeles County Supervisor Don Canabi. Are the operators of Pacific Hospital indicating they're reacting to stories like that?
They did. I had a very brief conversation with the owner of Pacific Hospital on Wednesday, Faustino Bernadette. And he said two factors were on his mind at that point. One was he did characterize the media coverage as negative. And he also said perhaps a more important point was that his hospital and the county had to come to agreement on how large they wanted Martin Luther King Harbor Hospital to be in the future. He didn't say which side the county was on, whether they wanted a larger hospital than he was able to provide, but the implication was as much.
So he was looking at doing something, starting it off with training wheels, so to speak, and then as they build their expertise and confidence, potentially expanding it from there?
Exactly. His initial proposal was to open a hospital of only 77 beds, basic emergency services with no advanced or very few advanced specialties.
What is still being offered at King Hospital?
Well, it's currently an outpatient clinic. People can see doctors for chronic illnesses, but there are no emergency services. There are no trauma services. There are no inpatient services of any kind.
And it's just sitting largely shuttered then at this point, except for those outpatient services. And are there any other healthcare providers that are out there that have expressed any interest whatsoever in making a bid to operate the hospital?
Well, Supervisor Yvonne Burke, who represents that area, told me that she has spoken with representatives of the UC system who she said would eventually like to operate the hospital but want someone else to start it up. And so she was very hopeful that someone like Pacific or someone else would go through the trouble to start it back up and then transfer much of the authority to the UC system in 2 or 3 years. As you know, the UC system has budget problems of its own, and she said that they just weren't willing to do it at this point.
Well, if what is the reasoning, as you understand it, for the University of California to do that? Because one would think, at least I would, that they would want to be in from the ground level to make sure that it's, you know, their standards and that they're on board from the beginning of it. Why would they prefer to have a private operator start it up and then step in and take it over later?
Well, their budget problems are particularly bad at this point, and they have substantial tasks already in front of them, and the explanation that was provided to us was that they do have a long-term interest in Martin Luther King Harbor Hospital. It's just that this vacancy is hitting them at a particularly inopportune time.
What has been the impact on the South Los Angeles community, particularly with the closing of the emergency room at King Harbor?
Well, it's really not an understatement to say that there's a very significant healthcare calamity taking place in South Los Angeles. By many measures, South Los Angeles is one of the most underserved areas in the entire country for healthcare services. So the need for a public hospital with the ability to deal with, you know, both chronic illnesses like diabetes, which is prevalent in South Los Angeles, as well as, you know, the acute trauma needs is really, really dire.
We're speaking with Garrett Theroff, Los Angeles Times staff writer, one of three writers of today's story, which details two major developments in the county healthcare system yesterday, the first of which was Long Beach's Pacific Hospital, a private operator, deciding to step away from negotiations with Los Angeles County on operating the now largely closed King Harbor Hospital in Willowbrook. That leaves no one, at least at this point, willing to undertake direct negotiations with the county to operate that facility. But then shortly after that, Bruce Chernoff, who is the head of the Department of Health Services, announced he's going to be resigning. And Garrett Theroff, I want to talk about that now. Was this totally unexpected to the board?
You know, it really was. Many of the aides and supervisors who I spoke with yesterday said that they were completely caught off guard, and that they had full confidence in him. It seemed to be a genuinely surprising announcement.
Now, they had not all been fully enamored of Dr. Chernoff. What were some of the tensions between members of the board and Dr. Chernoff?
Dr. Chernoff was criticized for a couple of things. The two largest complaints that he sustained over his tenure were, one, that he did not allow for input of what are called stakeholders. So these are patient advocates, doctors, anybody who has a stake in the healthcare system. Many of these people complained that they felt that this was a closed door to them. At the same time, he fielded some pretty, you know, he was part of some very acrimonious interactions between himself and the board, which were sometimes. The board was at times frustrated by the lack of information on key questions, such as the problems that have been taking place at Harbor UCLA in Torrance, where regulators said that people waiting to reach the emergency room were in immediate jeopardy because of insufficient staffing.
And then there was also his proposal to close a number of the county outpatient clinics, and that got a very cold reception from the board.
That's right. And this is something that you saw with the previous health director, who also made proposed budget cuts and then was undercut by the board. And so in some ways you have similarities between the last two health directors who were given very challenging situations, came up with proposals on how to address it, but then did not gain full support from the board and for their plans.
Now, this is a position that pays more than $300,000 a year, and I think some of us would argue it's underpaid, because who would want this job? I mean, it's
right,
the level
right.
of stress and the complexity, the difficulty in having enough funding to be able to provide the services to 700,000 people. I mean, this is just a huge job. Are the supervisors concerned about who would want it?
Yeah, they are. It is topic A at the County Hall of Administration today, how exactly they are going to entice someone to take this job. As you said, it's a very high-paying job, but the type of person that they need for this sort of position can get that kind of money doing a lot less elsewhere. And it's going to be a very, very difficult position to fill.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those jobs that, to those of us on the outside, look at and say it seems like an almost impossible job. What you're being asked to do in the provision of public health care versus the number of dollars that are available to do it and the systemic problems, you know, everything from King Hospital and its problems. You mentioned the Harbor UCLA, and then you've got the new County USC that's scheduled to open.
That's right, and that has suffered delays as well. This was, as you know, the C Hospital is the old Depression era building or complex, rather, and badly in need of replacement. And the new facility has suffered a series of delays, and was originally supposed to be open in last year, and now does not appear to be ready until the very end of this year.
Now, there's still some issues to be resolved on pediatric beds for the new County SC.
That's right. There's a debate going on internally of how many beds will be dedicated to pediatrics. As you know, the new facility is smaller than the old facility, so many of these programs are having to constrict. One of those is the pediatrics program, and the hospital officials are engaged in a pretty intense debate over how many beds they can dedicate to pediatrics. On one side, but on the other side, any bed that you dedicate to pediatrics would likely come at the expense of adult beds. And there are some who say that if more beds are dedicated to pediatrics, the waiting time for adults would reach unsustainable levels of perhaps 21 hours.
Finally, Gareth Theroff, what kind of budget scenario is County Health looking at for the upcoming fiscal year with, you know, all these declines in property tax and other revenues? The county's going to have to tighten its belt. What's the impact going to be on County Health?
That's true. And federal and state money is all diminishing. And next year, the Department of Health Services is looking at a $190 million deficit, and they expect it over 2 years to grow to $750 million.
All right. Well, I'm going to be fascinated to see what happens in the way of the search for a new director of health services for Los Angeles County, with Dr. Bruce Chernoff's announcement yesterday that he is resigning and he'll be leaving the position at an undetermined future date. Gareth Theroff of the Los Angeles Times, thanks for being with us. We appreciate very much your filling us in on both these major stories.
Thank you, Larry.
Thanks. This is Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. We'll continue by focusing on the challenges to public health in Los Angeles County. Two of the county supervisors will weigh in on what they're now facing. This is Air Talk on 89.3.
Programming on 89.3 KPCC is supported by Dance at the Music Center, presenting Complexions Contemporary Ballet, April 11th through the 13th at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion. Recognized for its electrifying performances and breathtaking dancers, Complexions features the music of Marvin Gaye, Nina Simone, and Chopin, plus the Southern California premiere of Loose Change, choreographed by Taye Diggs. Tickets available at Ticketmaster.com. More information at MusicCenter.org. Well, it's time for a ticket giveaway on KPCC. We have a pair of tickets to hear a discussion between two of Iran's leading feminist voices Wednesday, April 16th at UCLA's Royce Hall. Azar Nafisi is the author of the New York Times bestseller Reading Lolita in Tehran, and Marjan Satrapi's graphic novel Persepolis was recently released as an animated feature. Tickets at UCLALive.org, and if you're the third caller, you got them. 626-585-7893. Firefighters are looking into a blaze that destroyed Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign office in Terre Haute, Indiana. The fire broke out early this morning. Clinton is battling Barack Obama for support in the state ahead of its May 6th primary. Phil Spector has lost another battle in his bid to disqualify the judge presiding at his murder retrial. A state appellate panel has refused to order the appointment of a neutral judge to determine whether Larry Fidler should be removed. Spector claims Fidler was biased during his first trial, which ended in a hung jury last fall. Fidler previously refused to remove himself from the retrial. The music producer is charged with shooting actress Lana Clarkson 5 years ago. He claims that she committed suicide. Taking a look at traffic in Hawthorne on the 405 South Rosecrans on-ramp, that on-ramp is shut down to clear a crash. It's 10:41.
This is Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Film Week on Air Talk, 20 minutes away. Our critics will not only preview the films that are coming out this weekend and let you know what they think of them, but also talk about what's happened to foreign language films in Southern California. For many of us, when we were growing up and throughout our college years, there were an abundance of subtitled films on screens throughout Southern California. Those days largely gone. We'll talk about why that's happened, the economic and cultural forces at play on Film Week on Air Talk at 11 this morning. We continue our conversation on the dual hits that have affected the Los Angeles County Department of Health Services, the first one being the Pacific Hospital of Long Beach, a small hospital private operator that had been negotiating with the county to potentially open a smaller King Harbor Hospital in Willowbrook, backed away from negotiations yesterday. And Dr. Bruce Chernoff, director of Los Angeles County's Department of Health Services, announced his resignation yesterday, apparently to the surprise of the Board of Supervisors. With us is Los Angeles County Supervisor Zev Yaroslavsky. Supervisor, good to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry. It's good to be with you.
Were you quite surprised by the resignation?
Yes, I was, but I usually am when people walk into my office and say they're quitting. So I don't think any of us had any clue that he was being solicited by another outfit to work for them, or that he was interested. I'm not sure how interested he was. Based on my conversation with him, he was made a very generous offer that he couldn't refuse, and with a lot less stress. It's not the first time that's happened, where we lost a couple of years ago our child welfare director, Dr. David Sanders, who is a star in his field, to a foundation job in Seattle, and there was nothing we could do. We almost offered to double his salary in it. It just wasn't enough to keep him here, because these are quality of life decisions as much as financial decisions. So I understand Dr. Chernoff's decision to do this, although it was very disappointing, I think, to all of us.
Well, and it comes at a time, obviously, as though there's anything other than a crisis in county health, but a particularly bad time. You've got the deficit, you've got County USC's new hospital ready to open within a few months, you've got the effort to try and get things going again for inpatient and emergency services at King.
Yeah.
I mean, all this stuff.
Yeah, but you know, Larry, there's accurately quoted in the Los Angeles Times this morning that there's never a good time to lose a department head, and especially the Department of Health Services director. So whether it was on April 10th or on October 10th, it's going to be a bad time. And no individual, no county supervisor, no department head is indispensable. People retire, people resign, people vacate their jobs for a variety of reasons, and you have to fill them, and we will do that. It's not like the spouse just died. This is a part of what organizations have to do to fill vacancies as they're created, and to try to rebuild an organization. And in this case, so we have a pretty decent organization. We will find an interim director who will take us through this period. We will do a national search, I'm sure, to find a director, and we'll survive just fine.
Is this a job that you think many of the most talented people in the country are going to look at and say, this, it's so limited on what you're able to do. It's a huge system, and so many people are served, but the challenges are so great, and the funds are so squeezed that there's not a way to fix the problems.
Yeah, the problem is, I mean, I've said that this is the toughest local government job, or maybe the toughest public service job in California. Because the head of the Department of Health Services is running a department that is chronically underfunded, that is structurally structural deficit, perpetually in a structural deficit, and your job, your clientele, your responsibility are the uninsured, the indigent of our society, and so that it's a huge millstone around the neck of a department head. So that's why we've had trouble in the past getting a broad array of people applying for this job. It's not like a fire chief's job where everybody's knocking the doors down, or a police chief's job where everybody's knocking the doors down to get the job. This is a job that that anybody who's qualified to do it is probably saying to him or herself, I'm better off where I am in Des Moines running the hospital there than going to L.A. County where the circumstances are totally beyond the control of anybody. The number of indigents that we have, the number of uninsured that we have, is not a product of local government policy or of the health director's policy. It's a product of a failed national health care policy. And the fact that we are in Southern California, where we have a disproportionate share of the uninsured, is a double whammy. So, yeah, it's a tough job. But, you know, there are people in our society, and Bruce Chernoff was one of them, who see a challenge and say I'm going to take that on, and there are people who live to challenge these or to scale these walls.
Yeah, thrill seekers. Yeah. That's what this job is. Seekers. It's a thrill seeker job. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's the way to put it. although I'm not sure how many thrills you get. This is a job that has to be done, and it's a dynamic situation. We're going to have a new administration in Washington in January. We're going to have to revisit the funding models that we have between funding arrangements we have between L.A. County, the state of California, and the federal government. We are facing a real serious deficit problem in the health department over the next 2 years of upwards of $750 million, and that's huge. The entire budget of the department is $4 billion, so it's a big chunk of the operating budget. We've got the issue of King Drew Medical Center that you alluded to in your introductory remarks, and whether we'll be able to open that and under what circumstances, and so there are a bunch of moving pieces, and I am not pessimistic about finding the right person to do the job. I'd like to be more optimistic about the end result, and I think we'll get there too.
Let's talk, Supervisor Steph Yaroslavsky, with us on Air Talk, about the King Hospital and trying to get that reopened. Pacific was apparently the only entity looking to negotiate for restarting the hospital, albeit much smaller scale than what it had been. Are there other options out there now that Pacific has walked away? And do you think Pacific might come back and renegotiate?
Well, you know, I don't know. This relationship with Pacific was in such an infancy stage. We had barely gotten out of the starter's gate in the discussion with them. I'm not at the table personally in the discussions with them, so I'm not intimately familiar with what transpired. But the scuttlebutt was that there were a couple of articles in the newspapers that raised questions about their ability to do this, that they've never run a hospital this size and this kind of a hospital, et cetera, and that they, one school of thought is they didn't like the bad press. Well, if they didn't like that bad press, then they probably made the right decision, because the press wasn't going to get any better. We all know that this is a highly contentious issue and highly charged issue, and there's and highly scrutinized. So if they can't stand that little zephyr of a Santa Ana that just came through, they'll certainly won't be able to handle the heat when the heat gets turned up. Secondly, the other school of thought is that this is a negotiating ploy, that they think that they've got the county over a barrel, that the county has nobody else to turn to except for them, and they want to drive the best bargain they can. My argument has been to my folks here at the county and to the public is there's only one thing worse than not reopening Martin Luther King Hospital, and that's reopening it under the wrong circumstances and then having to find out we made the wrong decision and then having to close it again. So At least speaking for myself, I can't speak for any other member of the Board of Supervisors, I am not going to be bullied or leveraged into making a bad deal for the county that doesn't serve our clientele and that puts our whole healthcare system at some greater risk just because there's only one person in town and just because we want to say we reopened it. We'll reopen this hospital. The sooner the better, but it's got to be under the right circumstances. I'd like to see the University of California step up into this fray. The university itself, and I mean the statewide system, not any local branch of the university. The statewide University of California has been without has had a lame duck president. They've just hired a new one. They've not made any decisions. They've been reticent to make any decisions about anything, certainly about something like this. I'm hoping with the new president coming in that they will revisit the issue of a partnership with the county over Martin Luther King Hospital. They have an interest in doing this for their own internal reasons at the university and their medical schools, and we have obviously an interest in having them do it. I'd rather be in a relationship with a not-for-profit, especially University of California arrangement. We already have a relationship with them at Olive View and at Harbor than with a for-profit organization, which raises a lot of questions.
Okay.
So we have there's a lot of water to go under the bridge yet, and I wouldn't jump off the roof quite yet.
Xavier Oslofsky, good to talk with you as always on Air Talk. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Los Angeles County Supervisor Xavier Oslofsky, and we speak now with his colleague on the board, Supervisor Yvonne Burke, within whose district King Harbor Hospital resides. Supervisor Burke, thank you for joining us.
Oh, very pleased to.
Thanks. Well, you've heard the comments of your fellow supervisor, and is that your view about King Hospital, that you're not...
possibly a little bit different. My feeling is that it's very difficult to arrive at someone to take it over, and I would love to see the University of California take it over. And I've had conversations with a couple of the chancellors and heads of the health particularly, and they have an interest, but their opinion seems to be that they do not want to get involved in opening a hospital. But the statement that was made to me was that if there was a reputable operator, they would be very interested in a couple of years of taking a role there, and that they would have an interest. Unfortunately, the University of California is in the process of opening up a new medical school at Riverside, which is taking a great deal of their attention. In addition to that, we all know the UCLA, big hospital, we know the issues in Irvine, but there is still a lot of discussion that's going on. As a person who served as a regent, ordinarily what happens is that you do have a person who is assistant to the president of the university whose responsibility is health, but they take a lot of their direction from the people who are running the various hospitals throughout the system. So I absolutely believe that there is a reason for the University of California to come in, because they could use the residency slot,
okay,
and it would be a really positive thing for them. It would be an opportunity for their students to have an experience with a variety of types of patients. But
you got to get another operator in there first, it sounds like.
Well, they are not in the business of opening hospitals.
Okay.
UCLA is the only one that I'm familiar they ever opened. And the history is that they have taken over public hospitals that were operating in the past. So I do think that there is a real possibility with the university. I just don't think it's going to be today. I don't think it's going to be next year. But I think that it's out there. But we have to get someone who is willing to open it. Now, is it Pacific? I don't know. I think that if Pacific pulls out, then maybe someone else will come in. But there's a finite number of people who will take on that kind of a responsibility. We've had a lot of discussions with all of the hospitals in the region who might be in a position to be able to operate it. The other alternative, of course, is for the county itself to reopen it. And with the budget situation that we're facing, that's a real challenge.
Well,
would the county be willing to take on
opening it. And in addition to that, would the federal government accept the county as an operator at this point when they have indicated they'd like to see other management initially before they put their money back in?
What about some of the other hospitals in the region? I know they've been hard hit because of the closing of the emergency room at King, and so they've had to pick up their slack. Are there any of those neighboring hospitals that might be willing to open up at least the emergency department at King so that more patients could be treated and there could be more coverage in that area of South LA?
Well, unfortunately, to open up an emergency room, you have to have rooms to transfer those emergency patients to, and you have to have a wide array of services available at that site in order to operate an emergency room. You have to have a number of beds in order to transfer those people who come in an emergency room.
So, isn't it a comparatively small number of beds, though, that you need to service the emergency room?
Well, it would be certainly more than. Assuming that you have 32 beds in your emergency room, you have to have the ability to transfer people, many of whom might have to have orthopedic, might have to have cardiac, might have to have a wide variety of different specialties.
Okay, so you have to have a minimum size of there's
well,
no
I think
way of
77 was what I think they were looking at.
Oh, okay, all right. And so none of the neighboring hospitals, facing the kind of load that they're getting now, would necessarily be willing to do that.
Well, you don't know. So far, they have not stepped up. They have looked at it very seriously. It's not as if we haven't had a lot of discussions with all the neighboring hospitals. Initially, each one of them put in a proposal. And after looking at it, I guess the real concern is how do you negotiate that? How do you work it out? What is your experience in terms of our patients? But, we don't give up hope. You have to continue to have these discussions. And also, we have to realize that we have a troubled area. We have lost emergency rooms. We're losing hospitals that have been the ones that we depend on for not only uninsured, but for our general population of people who have HMOs or PPOs. We're losing potential of those beds. So we have a real crisis, and we have to address it.
Supervisor Burke, thank you for talking with us about it. This is probably the biggest challenge that you and your colleagues on the Board of Supervisors face. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Los Angeles County Supervisor Yvonne Burke. Within her district lies King Hospital, which is largely shuttered except for some outpatient services. We'll see what happens with any proposals to take it over. We were scheduled in this hour of Air Talk to focus on something I discussed at the Getty last night, which is the future of the historic bridges over the Los Angeles River. We had a wonderful panel discussion, a great meeting, those of you who were out there last night for that. And the Los Angeles Conservancy and the Friends of the LA River with the Getty Conservation Institute this Sunday from 10 to 4 doing what they're calling the Bridge Mix, a tour with shuttle buses and special activities all along the four major historic bridges that cross the LA River just east of downtown Los Angeles. If you'd like more information on it, should be a real fun event. I went out there and saw the bridges myself. You can go to laconservancy.org. It's this coming Sunday. This is Air Talk.